we get to the Rashog Report, brought to you by Shadified Salon and Barbershops, where studs like Struds get their haircut.
Well, not Struds anyway. He hasn't got a haircut in 5 months. But and trust me, I should have taken a picture of it because I tell you, the power alleys, whew, Mo's going to be like a barber McDavid to make that coif save it for another year, because the power alleys, like, they used to be probably at around 320. They're probably at around 360 right now, if you know what I'm saying. We welcome in Ryan Rashog from TSN. And Shogger, McDavid, Nurse, Yamamoto speaking today. Connor, yeah. McDavid saying, hey, the good teams got to defend better. He feels like they've taken strides, but they got to take another big one.
Yeah, for sure. Can I tell you my Bo Horvat draft story really quick before we dive into the Oilers today, since he scored
sure.
a nice goal? So I was working on the draft floor. We had the broadcast the year he was drafted. And so his name gets called, and I usually stand next to the stage, kind of, you know, just off, a little bit out of the way. And Horvat gets drafted, and he comes walking down, and, you know, the NHL people are there, and the Canucks PR people are there, and he's walking, and he gets close to the stage, and he peels his coat off and turns around and hands it to me. I don't know if he thought I was... part of the staff, or I don't know what he thought. I was standing there with a TSN microphone, and he just handed me his suit coat. So I stood there holding Bo Horvat's suit while he walked up onto the draft floor, or to the draft stage, and took all his pictures and stuff. So anyway, it was pretty funny at the time, and we've had a good laugh about it since.
Oh, nice. Yeah. How long did you hold it for?
We all have a role to play. I held it for a couple minutes because the PR people had to go up on stage with him, and I was kind of standing there looking around like, so I was like, all right, whatever. So I stood there for a minute, and then somebody, I think from the Canucks draft table, came over and grabbed it from me. So anyway, I was going to check the pockets, but.
Well, yeah, you should have left him. Maybe you should have left him one of your Ryan Rashog cards in the pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, because anyway, you carry those around to house parties and stuff and leave
beauty
them everywhere.
Beauty goal scored today. Beauty goal. But, back to McDavid and the availabilities. You know, what I would say is that, good on the Oilers for making that happen, because I think in the confusion of a season ending inside a bubble and then the players needing to get their – year-end interviews done, and then everybody obviously being anxious to get the heck out of Dodge. You know, I think it would have been ideal if they'd have done it a little bit quicker, but everybody, I think, sort of scatters, and so they had to regroup, and probably not great to ask guys to do it a week later, but good on them for doing it. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, did anything really significant stand out to you? I thought the money quote from McDavid was that I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was along the lines of good teams are teams that know how to defend, and we haven't figured that out yet. I thought that was really indicative of what happened. And though we didn't want to get too deep into the specifics of what happened, that quote really said a lot to me.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You look at the Oilers, and the four games stand out because they just played so poorly. Really, maybe, and not completely the whole game. Like, obviously, they were leading 3-2 in 5 minutes in game three. And you know what? You win that game, and then all of a sudden you're up 2-1, and who knows? You got complete control of the series. But, you know, they didn't win the game, and kind of in the fashion that they lost it. But really, the lack of emotion really probably overshadowed for a lot of the year. They played better. I don't think there's much question about that.
Yeah.
They're fifth in the conference. They played better. It wasn't like they lucked out all the time. They had good contributions from a lot of different players in the lineup. But still, their 5-on-5 play, their goals against 5-on-5, didn't really improve at all. And that has to improve.
100%. I completely agree. And I think part of what probably made that so frustrating for Oilers fans was they sit there and they watch a series, and the Oilers were in it. Like, there were lots of times where they were carrying play. No one's saying they played terrible for the entire playoff series. There were times where they were carrying play, and there were times where they had the advantage and where guys were making good plays, right? It wasn't all awful. But suddenly, with their entire season on the line, it seemed like every single player suddenly figured something out and hit a gear that I think most of us would agree they hadn't hit yet as a team. They found a level that they had not hit at any other point in the series yet. And I think if you're an Oiler fan, I mean, you point directly to the line combination switch. But I think there was a sense of urgency that was going to come being down a goal with that much time anyways. So whether they changed the lines or not, or whatever the cause of it was, suddenly for 7 minutes they showed what playoff hockey is supposed to look like. And I think that was probably really hard for other fans going, well, where the hell was that? Why could you not find that sooner? And I think that, to me, I was watching it going, well, there it is. That's how it's supposed to look. When I cover, you know, playoff series deep into the playoffs and I'm in the building watching the games, that's what the hockey looks like, what they're doing right now. And they just didn't access that part of their game till the very, very end. And I think that had to sting for Oiler fans.
Oh, 100% it did. Do you believe do you see Gates on Haas as a fourth-line center? Do you think he has potential to be a third-line center, or is he a fourth-line guy?
No, I think he's a good fourth-line center. I don't necessarily view him as a guy that, I mean, on a good Stanley Cup-winning team, he's not a third-line center. You need to have a real good...
Okay, but on the Oilers next year, who I don't think are a Stanley Cup-winning team.
Wow. No, the Oilers need to do better than Gaetan Haas at the three-center spot. And that's no disrespect to him. I mean, the guy just, you know, he's just coming across and you know, carving his way. I think he went from, not an afterthought, but a guy when they signed him, people went, okay, really interesting. They're stocking the ranks, right? That's one of those, hey, if you throw enough against the wall, something will stick. And he was one of those players that was on a long list of guys, Yurko and all these different guys. And he actually defined himself among all of those guys, more than Nygaard, more than other guys. So good for him, and I think he belongs. But the Oilers need to aim higher than him as a third-line center. They need a guy that is a playmaker. They need a guy that can play some minutes against other teams' top guns if they need them to. They need a guy that can win some face-offs, preferably a right shot. They need the right type of player in that role. So whether that's, you know, Strom having been trending towards developing into that or not, they took a huge step backwards when they made that trade and hurt themselves badly at the center position in a way that was unnecessary. And I think they still feel the sting from that.
Yeah, we could go through the list of the stinging of some of the bad trades from old PC. There's no question about it. And the thing is, I looked on the free agent market for third-line centers, and you know, there's not a lot right now that are available who I would look at as a third line center realistically. And then you got to consider, you know, what they're going to pay. Now, the guy that I wanted them to get last year, and they even, I know they offered him a contract, but he ended up going to the Islanders, was Derek Brassard. And, you know, he signed a 1-year deal for $1 million. You know, I wonder if he would consider. But the one guy that I would strongly look at, I know he plays wing and center, is Thomas Nosek from Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
I
made $1 million. Like, he didn't put up big numbers. He made $1 million. I don't think he's a player that's going to command any sort of big numbers, but yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah, no, and like, that's the kind of, it might not be like a huge splash type guy because you just don't necessarily have the resources to go out and sink that kind of, you know, that kind of money into a guy like that. I've always I really like Kerfoot. I know he's a left shot, but and he's played lots of wing too. But I've always really liked. I think there's a good foot speed there, and there's a competitiveness in his game that I like. I would take Kadri over him, but he's a guy too that's maybe a little bit in the mold that they're looking for and can develop into that. So yeah, they need to find somebody that is an upgrade on Riley Sheahan, because, I mean, let's face it, Riley Sheahan he's a fourth-line center, and they signed multiple fourth-line centers hoping that somebody would come in and push as a third-line center. And, you know, there were a few moments where Sheahan did a little bit, but I think it's an important spot, and you got to lock that spot down, and you need the right guy. And I don't necessarily see him coming in the organization right away. And so
yeah, McLeod's their best option moving forward, right?
Yeah, and I like him. Like, I really like him. I thought he looked good in camp this year. I love the way he skates around out there. I love those things that he can do. But I think, again, that's a developing player. And so he's going to need to be broken in, and he's going to need some time and to gain the confidence in the league to do that role properly. And so you don't depend on him in either of the next 2 years. You know, you don't go, wow, we don't need to go find that guy because we have Ryan McLeod, right, if you're the Oilers. It's great if you think he may be projecting in that direction, but you still need to go get your business done because you're supposed to be trying to win right now.
Yeah, the guy, I mentioned him at the trade deadline, who I thought would have been a good fit, and I still think he would be, is Chris Tierney. That's the I wrote about him at the deadline.
Yep.
Yeah, and now Ottawa's got a ton of cap space, right? So that might be what kind of allows them to entice him to come back, and maybe he doesn't want to go there or not. But he's a player that even going back to when he was in San Jose, Tierney's got some upside for me. I like him a lot. The only issue is he's a left shot, and I think at some point the Oilers need a right shot center in their bottom six. Now I know that's Gaetan Haas. He's not necessarily a big faceoff guy just yet, but like Tierney's got some offense, man. Like the guy, you know, he scored 40 points twice. He had 37, and he would have had 40 because you know that was a shortened season with 71. Like those are some good numbers. Now he's obviously going to cost you a little bit more though.
Right. Yeah, he will, and he's. What is he, 20, in his mid-late 20s, 25, 26, something like that?
Yeah, he just turned 26. I think he's a July birthday.
Yeah, he's got 400 and some games under his belt too, so I think that's what you're looking for, right? Like a good team that's prepared to go deep into the playoffs. You know, you've either got a really high-end prospect there who's like, you know, well on his way to being a top six player, but maybe at that stage in his career on a really good team, he's a third liner, like a Robert Thomas kind of thing for the Blues. Or you've got a guy that's got lots of experience, lots of games under his belt, and he's only played 40 playoff games because he's been with this.
Well, that's double most of the Oilers' main guys, so that's
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and, how much money they have to spend and how they can try and make things work, they're going to have to be creative. It's going to be tricky, but they're going to have to try and bring some good players in that can give them some good minutes.
Quickly, Shogar, you surprised Mike Green retired?
Am I surprised? I don't know the man well enough to have a sense for what the shape of his life looks like and what his, you know.
He's 34.
Yeah,
like he turns 35 in October.
Yeah, he's a family man. He's made a ton of money, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those guys that, you know, he's made a real good living. And so if you think about what he's facing, he's within to the last couple of years of his career for sure. He's getting to the point where he's going to have to start fighting pretty hard just for his place at the table. There's uncertainty about what the season looks like. Wasn't willing to go into the bubble scenario. You know, kids. I certainly don't judge. I think he had some game left in him from what I saw in his combination Detroit-Edmonton last year. I thought there was still some game there, but he's done a lot, and he's been around a long time, and he's made a pile of money, so I don't begrudge him.
Shogar, enjoy the weekend. We'll chat with you on Monday.
Okay, thanks, pal. Take care.